Okay, so Parshas Vayetze has one of the all-time classic events of literally comedy of the bride being switched at the altar. Bride being switched at the altar. Here we have. So we have a wedding happening here, and obviously Lavan was the greatest schemester, if that's even a word, greatest conniver, greatest operator around, and Yaakov knew this was coming, and he tried to protect himself, and, well, I don't know what you call it, didn't work. He got married to the wrong person, according to what he was planning on. Obviously, we believe in Hashem, and he married both. So it says here is in 29, 22. Lavan gathered all the people of the place and made a feast. And it was in the evening that he took Leah's daughter and brought her to him. And that's what happened. So the question that's going to be asked is this. And then he woke up the next morning. He said, you made a mistake. And he said, this is the way it goes. Okay, we'll do it again. And then he gave Rachel, his daughter, to him as a wife. Now, what's very interesting is that the difference between Pasuk 28 and Pasuk 22 in the description of the weddings. So what happened is, we had this discussion a couple years ago, is that he married Leah. Then he waited 7 days, Shav Brachas, and then he married Rachel and waited 7 days. But he had worked for the 7 years before, Leah, and then he promised to pay forward the 7 years after that. But technically, the two weddings happened back to back. That's what we had an argument about a couple years, but it's open. So it was work 7 years, married 7 days, 7 days, and then 7 years. The difference is what we're going to discuss tonight, and it comes up practicality speaking, is how the Torah describes the two weddings. So the first wedding it describes, Lavan gathered all the people. In English, Vayesoif, Lavan is kol anche amokam. And guess what else it says? Vayas Mishni made a party. So we have a huge party with the entire area there. 28 it says, so Yaakov now is going to marry her. And this is what it says, very low key. And he gave him Rachel, his daughter, to him as a wife. And you talk about a sibling rivalry right here. One got a lavish wedding with the whole town, and one didn't. And obviously, we have to figure out why he brought the whole town in for the first one, or more so, if he did bring the whole town in for the second one, why would the Torah tell it to us? Maybe they're both, it's just not important to us. Maybe he made a feast for both, and the Torah didn't tell it to us. Sometimes the Torah tells us one thing in one place, we're supposed to figure it out. So we have two ways to understand it. Either he only made a big deal about Leah, or, no, he made a big deal about both, and tells us, by the way, of course, obviously, you know, go back 7 days, let's roll it all again, you know, do it again, we'll do the whole thing again. Same wedding, same event, same people getting the blessing, same witnesses, who knows? Just one switch, bride, who knows? So the question now we're going to analyze is why was everyone there? Now hopefully we get some time tonight, we start a little late. Hopefully we get to some wild idea. Why am I thinking of this now? Because there is a custom in Judaism, we'll see if it ties in, there's a custom in Judaism that when the bride and groom walk down, I don't know if everyone remembers their own weddings, it seems to be everyone stands up as they're walking down the aisle. Now, as everyone's nodding yes, I saw today, from Rabbi Belsky Zatzal, my neighbor, my hero, one of my heroes, Rabbi Belsky, in his Sefer that was published, that he writes that Rabbi Moshe Feinstein did not do it. Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky held yes, Rabbi Moshe held no. We'll go into hopefully some of the reasons and why. Why yes, why no, what's the game plan going on here? But before we get to that, of what the audience is doing, we're going to discuss, that's the audience today, are we standing up? We're going to discuss the audience then, what was going on. So there's a famous Medrash, maybe, one approach. So there's a famous, he said, which we'll get to, he said that maybe the reason, he said two things very intelligent so far. One is maybe not to do it because maybe it's a non-Jewish custom. We don't want to do non-Jewish customs at a wedding. That might be a potential reason for a Moshe Feinstein. One of the reasons why yes to stand up is because there is a quote, a phrase that really starts in the Medrash. It's not a Gemara. In a Pirkei de Rabbi Elazar, that's the type of Medrash, that says a groom is similar to a king and it gives lists. The same way a king is praised, a groom gets praised. One of the reasons we give them speeches. The same way a groom should not be walking around alone. A king doesn't walk around alone. A groom doesn't walk around alone. And it gives several things that, oh, a king has this, a groom is like a king. So some extend it, it doesn't say these words, that just like people stand up for the king, they stand up for the groom. That's how some will say, but hopefully let's get back to that soon. What the reasons are, we'll see the pros and cons of that reason. But there is a phrase that a chosen, a groom is similar to a king.
Nothing to do about the bride at all, just only the groom in this case.
So, wow, we're on fire tonight. So one of the issues with that approach, if you're going to say there are at least five, maybe seven different approaches on why you would stand up for the groom and bride, if you're going to, or Rabbi Moshe says, don't do it. If you're going to say that the reason to stand up is, as he said, because there's a phrase that the groom is similar to a king. Interestingly, nowhere does it openly state that a bride is similar to a queen. So you could either say, well, that's automatic. The difference would be, would you stand up for her? That means, do you stand up for the groom because he's similar to the king? And then you can sit back down. And sometimes, by the way, in these days, the weddings, there could be a half hour in between. So from the time the groom sits down, let the kids walk down, let the grandparents, let the uncles, let the groomsmen, brood, whatever these names are, bridesmaids, groomsmen. And then when the bride comes, in the custom, in a lot of places, everyone stands up. But maybe there's no reason to stand up if she's not considered a queen. If the reason is king, she might not be queen. Or, no, it's automatic. The same way he's a king, she's a queen. Second problem on fire tonight. When does the king and queen topic begin? In fact, because he's stealing my thunder here, there's a story of Rabbi Yoyla Satma's grandfather that there was someone with him at a wedding, and as the groom came down, people stood up. That's 100 years ago. Because if you speak to your parents or grandparents, not a lot of people did it 100 years ago. This is in Europe, more than 100 years ago. And he did not stand up. The groom came down, a couple people stood, he stayed sitting. And then the guy bangs the cup, they step on the cup, break the glass, he starts heading back, and the Rebbe stood up. Says, so someone over to him, said, what's going on here? He says, could you stand up for a groom? He goes, well, you didn't do it on the way in, it's not a groom. So in your, at what point does someone become a groom that is similar to a king?
They had roots back then. Did they have a roots in?
I'm not sure. Fake. No. Real areas to know.
The Siddush court?
They have like what's called tenayim. It's like a fake, it's a quasi engagement. And by the way, is the king by engagement? If you're going to say, like Charles is saying, we're way off, but we're going to go with this, that you become a king when you get engaged, then you'd only have to stand for the first two blessings. Then what happens is in Jewish law now, you get two blessings, then the guy reads that whole marriage contract. That's the only time in Jewish law you're really engaged. Then goes the marriage ceremony. In the old days, they would separate those two blessings to a year before and the seven blessings afterward.
Table, when you break a cup plate or something?
No, that's even earlier. When you go to a wedding, no one pays attention. So you go to a wedding, what happens is at the altar.
The chuppah.
At the chuppah, right, the wife is going around, and then the guy, then they call up the witnesses and the guy, and they hand her the ring.
Yeah.
They make a couple blessings. And then there's usually, they call up another rabbi, and he starts reading something, everyone starts talking. And somebody makes a speech, right? He starts reading a whole contract there. The contract is the marriage contract. So for the two there, that's when they become engaged. Then we make depends how slow the guy reads that Aramaic. We'll say 2 minutes to 8 minute break, and then we do the other blessings. So what happens is that's the engagement. If you hold a king is when they get engaged and not marriage, so we have options in front of us. Do you say, stand up for them in the beginning or when they're walking down, because that's getting about to be engaged, or do you say, wait for the engagement, then you can sit down after that? Like, this is the question. If you say he's similar to a king, how long do you stay standing for? Are you standing because the bride might walk out, or are you standing because the king's still standing here? Until the king sits down, you don't sit down. So he's standing under the canopy for a half hour. What gives you the right to sit down? In ancient, the word is ancient times, as long as the king stands, you stand.
Really don't say tachan the day of the chasen too. Or by mitzvah, whatever.
Yeah, that's always looking for excuses not to say tachan. No, but that might be, yeah. So the question is at what point, so if we're going with his attitude, no, answer, that the reason we're going to stand is because a groom is like a king, that will lead to these three questions we just discussed. When does kingship begin? When does kingship end? Similar idea. Does the bride get the same queenship, better word? That is absolutely discussed. And that's practical difference in law. Practical difference in law is when you're standing up.
Also, is the vort that people have like, oh.
So nowadays, vort is nothing.
Nothing.
Okay. Yeah. Nowadays.
Party is not really a thing.
Right. It's just nothing. English word engagement party. Correct. Yes. The Chassidim, they do something called the Tanayim. They do like a deal breaker. So there's a little more strength to it. In Israel as well, they do what's called Tanayim. They do a little more strength to it. But I don't think that's actually called in law, Erison. The difference would be, when a woman is engaged. So for example, in Jewish law, when a couple's engaged, that word in legality, if the woman then does something with another male, she gets killed. So we have what's called the engagement party. That's for sure nothing. Even if you're going to do those things, called a tanayim, signing of a contract, it's a little more enforceable, but it's not what's called classic situation of a woman, if she was cheating and there was our courts and we would kill someone, which is all the ifs that don't apply today. If we did, that would not be called a married woman.
But that's not erusin?
Erusin translates to engagement. But what we do, what's called an engagement party, is not called Erusin. Erusin has its laws that make someone called engaged. So by just saying, well, we're engaged, that doesn't do anything in Jewish law. Making a party doesn't do anything in Jewish law. Adding those few details that Hasidim do and Israelis do is not called classic engagement. So at what point does someone is someone called, well, go on the mail right now, does a male become considered close to engagement, close to a king? Is he close to a king when he gets engaged, or when he gets only when he gets married, or even post-marriage, how long? Because it's possible to say, and that's one of the questions, if it's similar to a king, then during those first 7 days of partying, we should insist that we treat the guy the same way. Do you ever have a ruling that when the groom, for 7 days after the wedding, is coming to the Sheva Brachas party, everyone stands up because they're standing up for the king? No, they're standing when he walks into the dance, but nobody's actually treating him a certain way. Why? Because it's possible to say the kingship it's possible to say that concept was called similar to a king doesn't apply to standing up in certain things. And that's all for now, but we want to get to this. Why? That was all a side road that we were going to get to later. Now we took a shortcut, we're going back. Here he invited everyone in the town, and he made a party. By the first wedding, not the second wedding. A little odd. That's the question. So let's figure out why he would have invited them, and then see if it's relevant to the second one. So let's say, for example, you only invite people to the oldest child at the first wedding. Let's say it was a custom. Remember, Lovin created this fake custom afterward, that you have to marry the older ones all first. He made that up. I mean, it's a nice custom, but how real was that real custom? Well, he just played a game. Right. What was real, what was fake? So let's say he could come up with a new custom. You only invite to the first wedding, and then it wouldn't be invited to the second wedding. Possible, said it. Or you could say, as a joke, which discusses by Boaz, by the story of Ruth, I think we once discussed it, is that it could be he invited the whole town to the first wedding, and guess what? Looked under the tree, wrong religion, and said, you know what? Not one of these guys gave a gift. I'm making another wedding a week later. No one's in. By Boaz, there is a quote that Boaz didn't invite certain people. How does it work again? There was that he said that he's going to invite people to his wedding, but he knew he wouldn't get invited back to their wedding because they didn't have any kids. So he was like, I'm inviting them to my wedding, I won't get invited back to their wedding, maybe I shouldn't invite them. There's some medrash like that. It's much deeper than I just made it. But there is the idea that some people invite based on potential gifts. Is that so foreign? I'm going to invite my second cousin twice removed, who I haven't spoken to in 30 years. You know why? Invitation cost me 91 cents in the mail and it's a check. Maybe there's a chance they'll send me a $10,000 check. Worth it. On the other hand, my next door neighbor, who I don't speak to, who I know is not going to give me anything because they're half the time in my driveway for free. No way am I sending them a check. So you could make the joke, and I'm making this up. This is not a real thing that I found yet, that the first wedding he invited everyone, no one gave him a gift, so he didn't invite for the second. That's what I'm trying to say. What is the reason it says he invited for first, not for the second? Is there a reason he only invited first, not for the second? Or no, he invited both. We just don't need we don't need it to be told every single time. So there are different reasons I saw brought down. Now, there is a medrash which is famous, somewhat practiced today, that the people in the town were trying to hint to Yaakov that, by the way, check under the veil. You got the wrong person, buddy. And what was under the veil, name of the person, was Leah. And therefore, there is a custom by Sephardic weddings, they even do it a little bit, that something else, that when they sing at weddings, I can't sing, but what they do is they do la 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 la.
All you late.
Oh, the tongue wag.
All you late.
It's when you do that, whatever word you just said is, it comes at you could be saying Leia, 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 Leia. And the Medrash seems to say, the Medrash seems to say that they were at the wedding, the guests were saying this song and saying it, but Yaakov just thought it was a song, unrealized, not even a word, that really they were saying Leia, 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 Leia. Cute. Or it's a Medrash. So now, but let's go to the other, what's brought down. What's the reason why he invited the whole town? So the first one I saw, which I think is a very interesting reason, and it would explain why he might have not invited the whole town. Now, again, does that mean he invited nobody or he invited some of the town? Here it stresses that he invited Kol Anshei HaMakom. There's a lot of details here. Not only says he invited, Kol means everybody, so it could be here, he invited some people, no reason to say it. So we don't know. Kol Anshei HaMakom, and he made a Mishnah. So some say that he knew that he was playing a trick. He is unsure of what the reaction of Yaakov was going to be after he realizes he switched the bride. Okay, so he says like this, that Lavan was, we'll start with, Lavan was concerned what Yaakov's reaction was going to be as soon as he realized he switched the bride. Many people in that situation, reaction was going to be, divorce the bride. That's going to be the reaction. I married the wrong person, that doesn't count. If I have to go through a process of disengagement, is that the word they use? Then we'll disengage. Or whatever needs to be done, it's over. That was a mistake, I don't want that. And I want to marry the sister. Okay, this is all a game. So what Lavan realized was that Yaakov's a very good person. And he had the idea, potentially, that if Yaakov would have a wedding of only two witnesses at the court, it would be very easy for Yaakov then to turn around and say, I'm done with this. I'm not doing this. This is a mistake. You know it's a mistake, we're out. But because the entire town was there, which meant it was a major public event and a major party, he knew Yaakov would not be able to then turn around, because even though he was justified, the potential embarrassment for Leah would be too great. A private affair, and I don't know how much you need, but Lavan figured, I'm hedging my bet. Everyone is getting an invitation. The drunk who's homeless is getting an invitation. When it says, Kol Anshei Amakim, it literally means, what did they say over here? Did they actually say those words? All of the people of the place. I would venture to all of the people of the place, that means even the non-residents. The guy coming by on a camel for the hour, oh, by the way, free drinks, come on in. Why? The more people, the more merry, the more event, the less likely the repercussions will be what they probably would be in a quieter event.
Also, Yaakov is more distracted. He's not going to really think, who's that woman right there? It's like a million people that he's meeting, and he may not be thinking about her
maybe
closely.
I did not see that. I like it. I like it. Yeah. More people, more distraction. So answer number one is more people, less chance of repercussions. Answer number two, more people's distractions. Similarly, with what you're saying, is that in order to keep the ruse going, the greater, sometimes what's more obvious, the greater the lie if it's more obvious, which means Lavan's thinking to himself the opposite of this medrash. In the medrash they had that the townspeople were hinting to Yaakov, this way we're not going with that medrash. Just simple interpretation. The more people he invites, the more honest he's coming. Like, not one person in the town is saying, by the way, they switched the bride. If there's three people there, Yaakov might be, maybe it's what you're saying a little bit, but it's a little more. Instead of Yaakov being introduced to everybody and being busy, I'm saying he's more confident that this is a normal event. Because why would Lavan switch the bride when there's 1,000 people? One guy could slip up. One guy could be eating steak sauce and saying, can you imagine this bum, he switched the brides? You can't take a chance at happening. So I invite everyone to come up to keep the ruse going much stronger. The more people there, the more the con becomes more obvious. More, less obvious, more, a greater chance of succeeding it. Sometimes the con works greater when it's more in the open. Because you figure it's in the open. He's not going to do anything crazy. But in the open is how he's doing something crazy. That's how magicians work. They have a sleight of hand. So the sleight of hand here is what? Have everyone in the town come. Yaakov figures if everyone's there, well, yeah, he's not going to do something. He's not going to try something in front of everybody. He's got to try something in front of everybody for multiple reasons. So therefore, the whole town. When it comes to the second wedding, he isn't trying anything. The gig is up. You know who gets invited? Nobody. Because I don't need anybody. I'm not trying to fool anybody at this point. It is actually Rachel. So according to the first answer about not being embarrassed as well, he had the whole town there to make sure that Yaakov's not going to get divorced afterward. So when it comes to a wedding a week later, got to check that checkbook and be like, I don't know if I want to spend a lot of money again in a second. I just spent money last week. What am I afraid of? That he's going to get divorced? He's not divorcing Leah. He's not divorcing Rachel under any circumstances. His whole thing is Rachel. So if it's about divorce, Rachel's wedding could have been a small, quiet affair. If it's about the ruse has to get greater and larger and bigger, get the whole town involved to make it seem like it's a more innocent wedding, again, you don't need it as far as Rachel goes. We don't need that as well. The third reason, again, same idea. This would mean that he only invited now, not again. The third reason is because afterward, he was going to come up and say, oh, by the way, what does he tell him here? Was it not Rachel I worked for? Well, he said, no. Such is not done in our place. To give the younger before the elder. Okay, complete the week, we'll switch it. Such is not the custom of the place. The reason why Lavan had everyone in the place there was to say, everyone knew, everyone understood the custom. No, what do you mean? You see, nobody said anything. You know why nobody said anything? Okay, everyone knew, because obviously that's what everyone held. Do I need anyone there for the second wedding? So according to this approach, which is three approaches, if you want to count yours separately, three and a half, four approaches, it comes out, shockingly, that everyone only was there by the first wedding. A week later, Nobody was invited. I guess you have to have two witnesses for Jewish law, maybe. And if you have two kosher witnesses, so you might not even have that. There's a famous question on the side. How did Yosef marry his wife if there are no Jews in Egypt? So one of the approaches is that even though normally you need two witnesses, if a husband and wife say we're married, that works as well. So if that's true in law, it's a whole question of law how it works, then it could be second wedding, literally nobody was there.
Abraham married Sarah, there's no Jews.
Right. That's why, right. So it could be just, so it could be, when I'm saying the second wedding, I was saying maybe you need two witnesses. No, you know what I mean? That means the first wedding was a hoopla, and the second wedding was nothing. Now we know, thought of this right now, that when the Torah was given, the first one was done with thunder and lightning, and then it got destroyed, instead of tablets. And the second one got to do it quietly. But the only reason I can't say that is because it probably is said somewhere, Leah's marriage stayed. She might not felt that she was loved properly, but the marriage remained intact.
Why did Yaakov just divorce, by the way?
It could be why there's a reason not to have, by the way, big weddings. Because the big weddings are when the guy is fooling the guy, and by the small wedding, he did. Why did he divorce? There's a lot of on that. Maybe remind me for next year. Yes, there's a lot on that. Why he didn't actually divorce.
Knew theoretically, Leah was important to Judaism, to the Jewish people.
Yes.
And Yehuda and Mashiach.
Right. Well. Right. No. So someone to say that his main thing was that Yaakov held, like he was saying, that he really believed he's supposed to marry both. Because in the end, he knew Esav was a bum. And people were saying, oh, one on one. And he was like, listen, Leah, I got bad news for you. I know what the other one looks like. No, that's not what you want. You don't want, and it said Leah was crying about it because she didn't want that. He was like, listen, this is not a good idea, but I can't just go and marry you. Because if I marry you, you know what happens? We change my name. Instead of the name Yaakov, I'm taking a joke now, but the point is real. The joke is a joke. Instead of my name Yaakov that I stole, Yaakveni Zepamayim, that Esav told Yitzhak he twice stole from me my blessings and my firstborn, he'll have to change his name to my thrice. He stole my wife as well. So it's possible that really Yaakov was not against marrying her. But logically, he was like, wait, I'm limited in what I can do here. I can't just go and take her. This is bad. That's like a death penalty. And correctly, Esav would have real legitimate complaints. But once I was fooled, and it comes out as a game, the whole world knew it. We have discussed in the past how the world runs a certain way. We think we're running the world here, and God's really running the world up there. So even though the split screen works, that everything we're doing is working, but God has it working for a different reason. So it's possible to say that Laban's inviting everyone to fool Yaakov, but in the end, that's what God wants, because if everyone's involved, everyone knows the great trick, then Yaakov now can say, I had handcuffs on me, I had no idea. There were literally 1,000 witnesses at the wedding. There was nobody, no, I was the last guy out of the trick. I didn't know about this. Everyone was in on it, and I'm a victim. Asa, what do you want me to do? And it could be, to go a step further, that Asa wouldn't want her at this point in time. Yeah. Asa's like, well, I'm going to take her? No, really, I'm going to take your seconds? You married her and you're divorcing, and I'm taking her? What am I crazy? Asa's not looking at himself that way. So it could be that in this world, unbelievable, the world's running it, and Laban's planning all the evil stuff against the Jews, and he's switching everything, and God's like, I have a great idea. It's working out well. In fact, there is a idea from the Bas Ayin, I think it's from, or from the Ben Lashri. One of the Sfarim in the Zera Emes project. I once wrote this down, I don't remember who it was. I think Ben Lashri. And he writes that the reason why he switched the bride is because Laban knew that Rachel was supposed to be the main one. And he figured if you marry Leah, then you can't marry Rachel because you won't marry two sisters based on Jewish law in the future. So he did it on purpose to, they say like this, but yeah, I just remember now. The Haggadah says that Lavan tried to destroy the Jewish nation. And we discussed this in the past. I don't remember now when. Check up RabbiHovner.com and put in the word Lavan. And we definitely had it on a Pesach thing. How did Lavan try to do it? We don't even see it openly anywhere. You read Medrashim, but openly you don't actually see that Lavan tried to destroy the world. So his answer, Ben Lashri's answer is, this is how he tried to destroy the world. He knew if he puts Leah in there, Yaakov won't stay with Leah. Because he held that's not the one I wanted to marry. So I'm not marrying a person I don't want to marry. That's not fear. But I can't marry Rachel because I can't marry two sisters. So Lavan's strategy was attempted, the Aramean attempted to destroy the world by putting in the wrong bride. Now, in God's world, there's a different way it works. By putting in, I'm making this up now, he does not say this, but I'm making, I don't like it. That, oh, Esav now said, I don't want her anymore. And then Yaakov had his reasons why he's allowed to marry two sisters, which we discussed a different year as well. Either it's outside of Eretz Yisrael, the Ramban writes, he only had to keep the mitzvahs when he's in Eretz Yisrael, or because of the greater good, they were allowed to violate certain things. There were certain leniencies that Lavan didn't think through. But the point of what I'm trying to say is that many times the split screen works. that people are doing something, they think they're in full control. And yeah, you're in full control for your evilness, you'll get punished. But God's running the world exactly what he wants. It's exactly what he wants. And there are million stories of this in the Torah and stories outside as well. Right, other things I don't want to say, I'm thinking now, but best hold up because it's an example that might be sensitive to people. But we did have it, I'll tell you when we did have it, on RabbiHavna.com, that Dasan Vaviram were unaware that the Jews were making a run to the desert. That means that all the Jews were told, listen, we're leaving Egypt and we're never coming back. The only two people who didn't know about it were Dasan Vaviram. It's on a tape, we have to look for it, put in Dasan into RabbiHavna.com. And God wanted it that way, because God held that they didn't have a right to leave. Because the reason the Jews were allowed to be Egypt was because among their qualities was they didn't snitch on each other. But Dasan Vaviram, we know from the past, were snitches. So they didn't have a right to leave anyway. So the world down here, the Jews were saying, you know, we don't trust Dasan Vaviram, let's not tell them we're about to leave. And they were mapping it out on this world because they were snitches. But in God's world, it worked the same way. Sometimes we're doing things in this world, but God's having it run the same way. For his reasons, not for our reasons. So here you have, wild idea, that Lavan is working in cahoots with the whole town to make Yaakov destroyed, and God's like, this is perfect. Which means everyone was there for Leah's wedding, because now this is how you started. Because now his handcuffs, Yaakov said, listen, Esav, I was not planning on stealing your wife. Yes, the Bechor you sold to me, therefore I was allowed to take the blessings, legal rights. I have my excuses. You don't agree, but, you know, agree to disagree. We have different opinions of what should have happened, but for me to go and take your wife, there's no leniency on that one. I didn't take your wife. Your wife was given to me as a trick. And now what am I going to do? You don't want her anyway. So it worked out that the first wedding had to have a lot of people there, while the second wedding did not. We're going to do more of this next week on why we stand. Because I brought this up now to say, what is the obligation of the people who are there? That's how I was thinking about that tonight. The obligation is to sing lay, 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 and hint to it? Is the obligation to play the trick? What's the obligation here? We have an obligation to stand up. We gave one reason now why to stand up, potentially what he said. The reason that we stand up for a bride and groom is because since a groom for sure has a concept that is similar to a king, you stand up for the king, you stand up for the groom, and we had questions on that as well. But according to everything we said tonight, maybe we have a brand new way. That means there is a rule in Judaism. If you're giving testimony, you know what you have to do? Rise. Stand up and give testimony. That's how it works in Judaism, by the way. Edim, stand up. Witnesses, arise. So it could be, this is really, as they say, Bederach Drush. In Drush fashion, not in the words itself, it's a wild idea. Maybe you can say that the reason everyone stands up, for sure when the bride walks by, we'll discuss the groom a little bit, is to stand up and say, by the way, we are saying witness that we assume the person walking down is the person who claims they're walking down. There is no ulterior motive, no shtick, no problem. No one's underneath switching the bride. No one's switching the groom. We stand up in testimony as to say we are not involved with any sinister plots here. And therefore, everyone stands up. Now, we don't know for sure if anything happened. We're just saying we don't know. We have no, we're standing up in testimony. If something else happens, we have no idea about it. The reason potentially to stand for the bride and groom is to say we are testifying that we are no longer part of any ruse, any charade, any shtick, any games. And that's why we have a custom. Even though when the bride may not be a queen, even though there's 20 minutes in between, sometimes everyone sits down. When the bride comes out, we stand up to say we testify that we think that is who it is supposed to be. God willing, next week we continue with why we stand up for a bride and groom, because there are several different approaches.